So today we're speaking from Madhya Lila, chapter 8, which is entitled Talks Between the Lord and Ramananda Roy. And today's verses, two or three verses from 283 onwards. So I'll just read the translation for these verses. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki. And then we'll read together 285. So this is part of a conversation between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya, and they have had an extensive discussion on many philosophical points, and we're coming to the end of this conversation. And just in the previous verse, Lord Chaitanya has finally, on the request of Sri Ramananda Roy, revealed his actual form to him. He has given him a special darshan and showed that he is actually Krishna and Srimati Radharani combined. So based upon that, we have this verse for today. Upon seeing this form, Ramananda Roy lost consciousness in transcendental bliss. Unable to remain standing, he fell to the ground. When Ramananda Roy fell to the ground unconscious, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu touched his hand, and he immediately regained consciousness. But when he saw Lord Chaitanya in the dress of a sannyasi, he was struck with wonder. And then today's verse. Translation. After embracing Ramananda Roy, the Lord pacified him, informing him, "But for you, no one has ever seen this form." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita 7.25, Lord Krishna states, Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita mudhoyam na bijanati lokamam ajam avyayam. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my internal potency yoga maya, and so they do not know me who am unborn and infallible. The Lord always reserves the right of not being exposed to everyone. The devotees, however, are always engaged in the service of the Lord, serving with the tongue by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and tasting Mahaprasadam. Gradually, the sincere devotee pleases the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Supreme Lord reveals himself. One cannot see the Supreme Lord by making personal efforts. Rather, when the Lord is pleased by the service of a devotee, he reveals himself. Srila Prabhupada ki. So what a nice sweet purport. We are just as at the high point of this interaction between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya. And obviously to have seen the form of the Lord is a very great benediction and a great mercy. Devotees just aspire for that day, sometimes that after their extensive efforts over a lifetime of Krishna consciousness, they may one day have the beautiful darshan of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. And the Lord definitely does reveal himself as he desires. It was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya who had encouraged Lord Chaitanya to meet Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy was in the government of King Prataparudra. And Ramananda Roy was a very great devotee. And they had this wonderful conversation where, interestingly, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the role of a student. And he started to ask questions of Ramananda Roy. Now, Lord Chaitanya did this often with different devotees, especially Advaita Acharya. He would constantly look up to Advaita Acharya and offer him respect because he considered him to be his senior. Advaita Acharya was elderly also, so it was quite a natural arrangement. But the devotees of the Lord never really like to receive the respect from the Lord based upon their bodily condition, or based upon any condition really. So Advaita Acharya, as we know, the example goes, he wanted to do something to make Lord Chaitanya chastise him. So he started speaking Mayavad philosophy. And towards the end of that philosophy, Lord Chaitanya got angrier and angrier, and he engaged in a little chivalrous rasa. with Advaita Acharya. And then Advaita Acharya's wife had to say, "Stop, stop, he's an old man. Release him, let him go." So the Lord likes to have these interactions and exchanges with his different devotees. And we know with Bhishma Dev, he exchanged a lovely chivalrous rasa as well, the rasa of fighting. And really he only does it with his devotees. Whenever it appears that he is chastising another demon or something, that is not really something that's so exciting for Krishna. He can do it very easily. He can destroy anyone with a slight, even a little thought. He's the Paramatma in everyone's heart. If anyone is due to expire, he can arrange that very quickly. No real exertion required on his side. But still we see he engages in extensive adventures sometimes. Adventures with Ravana, where they actually have a good battle. And it seems at some points that the Lord he's losing, or he's struggling, or he's in difficulty. But eventually the Lord is always victorious. And just as there have been so many individuals, Hiranyaksha, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, so many rogues, Krishna likes to enjoy whichever rasa he wants to enjoy. And he can have any rasa he wants, because there are millions and millions of servants who are just ready to offer Krishna exactly what he wants. So sometimes people become very envious of Krishna. Krishna is God. He has so many things. He has all these servants. But, you know, he's God and I am who I am. And wouldn't it be nice if I could be like Krishna? If I could have all this attention, all this fame, all this power, all this control. Actually, in one sense, Krishna, yes, he's the owner of all the fortune. The goddesses of fortune are his servants. Lakshmi Sahasra Shata Sambrahma Sevyamanam. Every day in Goloka Vrindavan, he's served by countless millions of Lakshmis and Gopis. He doesn't need to do anything special to attract anyone's favor. Devotees are naturally, when they're situated in their constitutional position of being his servants, they naturally render him service, because they obtain great bliss and satisfaction through that process. So Krishna is there. Now imagine what would happen if a conditioned living entity was given that level of power, opulence, ability, satisfaction. Well, they would probably go completely mad. Because if there is a conditioned living entity, they would not be able to be sober and steady in the face of great power, strength, beauty, service. We typically see that in this world, when someone possesses any of these qualities coming from the Lord, their behavior generally degrades, generally. Not always, generally. There are notable exceptions, of course, when devotees of the Lord are concerned. And therefore you have great kings, you have great leaders like Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma in the second canto, when he is about to embark on the creation, he has appealed to Krishna to give him instructions on how to create. And Lord Krishna has given him his darshan and given him his blessings. And then Lord Brahma asks Krishna, "Krishna, I am going to be engaged in this very difficult task of creation, but I have one request for you. Please ensure that I do not become proud and start to think myself to be the great controller." Typically this is what happens. Now, our great individuals, Mahajans in this world, they know the real danger that power, opulence, wealth, any of the opulences of the Lord can bring when we possess them. They may possess them. In fact, it is said that servants of the Lord actually possess all opulences. But because they are not attached to them, they have no need to display them. They have no need to show them off. They have no need to brag about them either. Whereas in the material world, you see the exact opposite. You see, a person is a little powerful, a little attractive. Immediately, that governs how they conduct themselves in their life. And therefore, pride typically leads to a deceitful behavior. It leads to a controlling mentality. And it typically leads to fall down. And this is why Queen Kunti says, Janma Ishwariya Shruta Shri Bhiredamana Madapuman Naivarhatya Vidhatum Vaitvama Kinchana Gochara. That my dear Lord, you can be very easily approached, but not by one who is trying to improve themselves through Janma Aishwarya Shruta Shribir, whether through high birth, through learning, through wisdom, through wealth, knowledge, all of these different activities that people like. If someone has an agenda of improving these as the defining aspect of their life, then it's very difficult for them to approach Krishna. On the other hand, if someone starts off actually surrendering to Krishna, then any wealth, opulence, power, prestige that is given to that person by Krishna, as was given to Lord Brahma, and is given to Indra and so many others, that becomes not a source of bondage, but a source of service opportunity for that devotee. So the possession of these items is not a problem at all. It is the mood and the intention with that possession. And so really we never quite possess anything. We utilize all the ingredients of the Lord. They were all created by the Lord. They are naturally in a relationship with the Lord. Ekala Ishwara Krishna Arasabha Vritya. Everything is a natural servant of the Lord, whether that is a living creature or something inanimate, such as an object in the material world. Krishna is the ultimate designer, the producer, the sustainer. It is only through his mercy that one gets to use or to have the association of anything in this world. So it is always difficult for a conditioned living entity to see the Lord and to understand how he behaves. Now, as we've discussed, that a typical conditioned living entity, if they had the power of the Lord, they would go astray. And imagine Krishna. He has unlimited wealth, he has unlimited knowledge, but he remains completely detached. He is described as the greatest brahmachari despite regularly having hundreds and thousands of wives, engaging with the gopis. Nevertheless, his behavior, his consciousness is exceptional. Now the non-devotees cannot understand this. They will turn to the pages in the 10th canto of the Rasa Dance and make all sorts of different comments about Krishna is this, Krishna is that. But they haven't understood a thing. Not the slightest thing about Krishna, his motivations, his intentions. Krishna possesses all power. He can vanquish anyone at a moment. Imagine in this world, someone irritates us. And typically the thought comes, oh, I wish I could get rid of this person. Or I wish I could just keep him quiet or just relocate him somewhere else. Or something like that. Imagine if we actually had the power to do that. What drama, what damage we would cause in this world. So the possession of great power, it's actually a blessing that we don't have it. Because we actually need empowerment in order to be able to use power correctly. You don't send a soldier out onto the battlefield with no training who is somewhat psychotic by nature. That's not the right place to send the person. If someone is going to be recruited into the police service, you have to make sure that you recruit a sane and stable person, not someone who loves to cause harm to others. So therefore power, when it is wielded and when the right to wield power is given, it should be given to correctly educated and stable and advanced individuals. Otherwise havoc is created. There are many tyrants in the world. They've existed since time immemorial. Nothing changes. Nothing will change. We shouldn't think it will change. Sometimes we can get a little carried away and think that the world will become a better place. There will be no trials and tribulations. Next year will be a better year for my Krishna consciousness. But you know what happens? Next year comes, we make more resolutions. Something else juicy takes place in the world. Something destructive, something troublesome. Our own situation changes. We experience some difficulties, some catastrophes, maybe some opportunities. And the end result is that golden moment that we're looking for actually practicing Krishna consciousness seriously, never comes. It is simply a dream. The actual golden moment is right now. Amidst every single situation that is offered to us right now, with all the difficulties, with all the opportunities. And actually each of us has so many opportunities right now, which could easily not be there in a different situation. We have the right to do service. We have the freedom to chant the holy name. We have the ability to serve. We have the chance to purify our life by reading this sacred scripture. How many people have that chance? And if they have that chance, how many of them have the desire to read scripture? They would rather read something more mundane, or just read the endless messages that are sent to everyone on WhatsApp, which are just there for people's distraction. And then you can add in all the other avenues as well. If you have the chance, you may not take it. So somehow, by Krishna's mercy, by some great fortune, we have the ability and we have the chance right now. So at least let's take that chance. When Ramananda Roy was discussing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness with Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya kept asking him, what is higher, what is higher, what is higher? And he explained the basic principles of Krishna consciousness to be a servant of the Lord. Then Lord Chaitanya was inquiring, who are the best devotees of the Lord? Who is the highest? What is the mode of service? And all of these questions were answered systematically by Ramananda Roy. Based upon his advancement and based upon the inspiration that he was receiving through the Lord's questions. When a bona fide and enlivening question is asked, the person who answers the question also becomes enlivened. And therefore there is a category of questions in this world which are considered useful, and a category of questions which are considered not useful. It is not the case that anything anyone says is of value. These days in Kali Yuga, however, what I've just said would be a shocking philosophy for many. They would say, what do you mean? I have a right to speak what I want, and whatever I say should be valued and respected. Well, really? Really? We should value and respect something that is actually valuable and worthy of respect. But that doesn't stop people demanding respect. And this is Kali Yuga. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada invokes this verse from the Gita. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita mudhayam nabijanati lokamam ajam avyayam mudhayam nabijanati. He says, I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. No one can demand that Krishna appears. They have to have the right qualities. And then beyond actually possessing the right qualities, they have to have another factor which is mentioned in the purport. That is to do with the pleasure of the Lord, whether the Lord has become pleased by their efforts. So Srila Prabhupada says that gradually the sincere devotee pleases the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Supreme Lord reveals himself. One cannot see the Supreme Lord by making personal efforts. Now this is interesting because our entire practice of Krishna consciousness is about making personal efforts. But we have to understand the mood of making those efforts. Any sincere person in any religious practice that is trying to make spiritual advancement engages in some effort. Those who are lazy make very little advancement. But those who engage and actually try to follow the process that is given to them actually make some advancement. But we still have to understand how that advancement comes. The advancement doesn't come as a result of us doing an activity. It comes as a result of having pleased Krishna, as a result of having done that activity. So devotees always keep the clear focus on Krishna as being the supplier, the source, the beneficiary. He's the one to whom all our activities should be offered. He's the Bhoktaramya Gitapasam, and he's the one who will supply whatever we need. And he may also withhold or supply taste and spiritual ecstasy and spiritual satisfaction according to his desires. Now, some people may try to imitate spiritual advancement by maybe imitating the way advanced devotees walk or behave or talk. But we typically see that those imitations fall away after some time. The person's inner character is what eventually gets exposed. And not so much the inner character, because actually if we look deep within ourselves, our characters are probably quite murky. They're probably quite embarrassing, actually. And the types of thoughts and the types of actions we feel inclined to do are probably not very desirable or honorable even. But if the person has an intention that I would like to be connected to Krishna, and I would like to follow a path of purity, then Krishna will gradually give that person a chance to become purified and to actually become pure. It takes some considerable period of time. If we have cultivated during an entire lifetime a program of contamination, which is basically what it is, a program of contamination, teaching us to enjoy to the maximum extent possible all the objects of the material world, and then to engage in different industries and activities in order to acquire the means for engaging further in that program of sense gratification, that is a type of contamination that we've been cultivating over lifetimes, not just this life, many lives. We've gone through many lives just in order to get to this stage where we now have a body that can offer us a high level of sense gratification and the means to accept it. As humans, we can theoretically enjoy more than an animal, right? Our features are different. Our intelligence is different. Our senses are more refined in some ways. We have minds, we have intelligence. But if ultimately that is not engaged in the real progress of cultivating Krishna consciousness and cultivating our spiritual identity, then it is simply expended like animals. As Prabhupada says, like cats and dogs. The activities of people are like cats and dogs. And they are nothing very glorious. However refined or clever or with whatever charisma those activities are conducted, they're not anything great at all. So in spiritual life, we have to learn to be, we have to learn to distinguish a genuine spirituality from real spirituality. There are many guidelines given. Especially, I'm thinking of one conversation with King Rahugan, where he says, "Rahuganaita tapasanayati na chejaya nirvapanat grahadva." He says that it is not by performing extensive austerities, it is not by living perfectly as a householder, it is not by surrounding oneself by blazing fire in the middle of the summer, or by immersing oneself in freezing cold water in the middle of winter. Some yogis do this as a type of austerity. It is not by so many other typical means of austerity that one becomes advanced in devotional service. It is vina mahat pada rajo abhishekam. It is if one takes an abhishek, a bath, in the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees of the Lord. That is the secret that is explained by the other great devotees of the Lord who are genuine servants of Krishna. And it is a very important secret, because if we want to learn about Krishna and if we want to come close to Krishna, it is a good idea to take shelter of those who are already close to Krishna. This is the whole system of the parampara. Why do we value the parampara system, the different sampradayas, the bona fide sampradayas that come from the four original sources? Why is it said in Shastra that one must sampradaya vihina te, a mantra? Unless the mantra is received in one of these bona fide sampradayas, its effectiveness is simply not there. People can chant any mantras. You might hear something on, someone may send you a clip that you're supposed to hear and then practice a mantra. It's not of any real value. It may be something you do as a cultural activity, or it may be something you do to feel better or feel calm or to give yourself some stability or routine. But the real effectiveness of a mantra of spiritual practice comes when we please the devotees and gain their mercy. So Srila Prabhupada, when he started this movement, he was continuing not something of his own concoction. He was manifesting a movement across the whole world which had not been done before, based on the teachings and philosophy of Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. Directly, the core aspects of this movement are the books which present the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Purana, the Amala Purana, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is a wonderful exploration, a wonderful series of conversations with descriptions of how the Lord interacts with his devotees, and the wonderful pastimes that can take place on a platform of transcendence. And the Krishna consciousness movement is based upon the philosophy and the substance in these books, which is the philosophy of Krishna. It is not anything concocted. It has no purpose. Sometimes we say that it is very easy to attract hundreds and thousands of people to this, to the mission or to any project or any religious practice. You simply have to give them what they're looking for. And what are they typically looking for? They're looking for satisfaction in the material world, good health, happy life, freedom, enjoyment. Now, there is nothing wrong with any of these items. But the slight problem, the slight flaw in having this desire at all is that this world is inherently never going to give you that. This world has been created from day one, step one, with the principle of dukkhalayam ashashvatam, napnuvanti mahatmanah samsiddhim. This world has been created to never fully satisfy anyone. Right from the topmost planet of Lord Brahma down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki. So now if you go to a big satsang, a big Bhagavat Saptaha, and you tell this to people, they will be very upset. They will leave probably. Why? Because it's not what they want to hear. What they're looking for is some endorsement of the chance to keep enjoying in this world. But an honest person will never mislead someone. An honest person will never say, okay, you do this mantra, you follow this process, you give this charity, and you will be happy, safe, satisfied, and everything will go nicely. An honest person will never do that. An honest person will say, you should actually make endeavor to understand your real constitutional position. This world that you're in at the moment is not your natural home. This is an artificial world. We're in a body which is the direct opposite of our inner nature. Our inner nature is Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. But this body is completely the opposite. Anyone can see that. This body is not always blissful, not full of knowledge, and definitely not eternal. And so we're trapped. We're trying to be happy. We're stuck in a body which supplies exactly the opposite environment. And then the world, which will never supply exactly what we want. So actually the most merciful thing we can do to someone or for someone is to help them be situated in the actual position where they can be truly happy. And that is the spiritual world. And the spiritual world, it is exactly everything we've been looking for, with Krishna at the center. Anything that is desired is simply available. And the things we desire are those things that will enhance the pleasure between Krishna and the devotees. There is no birth, old age, disease, death. No need to suffer from heat or cold, disease. No need to lament over any failed projects. Nothing like that. There's no failure. Every step is a dance, every word is a song. That is the description of the spiritual world. That is the real place that we are supposed to be going. People don't like to hear it, therefore they will hear other things. But nevertheless, it is the duty and the job of a devotee to always emphasize this point and to help people understand that it is only by re-situating ourselves in our original constitutional position, arasabhavritya, as a vritya, as an associate of the Supreme Lord, can we be truly happy. That's a secret. And therefore, we can take this verse that Srila Prabhupada quotes very seriously, where Krishna says, I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. We have to come to a platform of knowledge about our position. When we actually understand our position, basic sambandha jnana, and we understand Krishna's position, janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvatah tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mam iti sorjana. Janma karma cha me divyam. Who is this me? This is Krishna. When one understands the janma and karma, my birth and activities, and even birth is really the wrong word to use. There is no correct word in our language really to describe it, so we use birth, which signifies a type of appearance. One who understands the transcendental nature. Our birth isn't transcendental, right? It is a purely material thing. One who understands that never has to take his birth again in this material world. That's the benediction which comes from understanding Krishna. That is the opposite of ignorance. That is the opposite of foolish and unintelligent. And we can only reach that state when we sincerely engage in our practice, keep apologizing to the Lord for all the mistakes we continuously make. Continuous, it's probably on a daily continuous basis, at least with me. And we keep requesting the Lord to please accept the little tinge of desire that we have to eventually be situated at His lotus feet. When He is pleased, and this is the part of the equation that we shouldn't forget, when He is pleased by our efforts, then He will bestow upon us, as it said, His own darshan, He reveals Himself. So we have to wait patiently for that day. And we engage in our practice, and we have to keep trying. With the weapon of knowledge, it's described. You know, we have to destroy with the sword of knowledge this ignorance that is pervading our consciousness. It is quite a destructive thing. It is only because of this ignorance of our identity, our purpose, our connection with the Lord, that we actively create for ourselves a mentality of false existence in this world. When we change our mentality, our existence in this world also ends. It is the Lord's guarantee, and it ends by His mercy. And then we are happily situated at His lotus feet. So that is definitely a goal worth aspiring for. So I'll stop there. This is a very nice conversation between the Lord, Ramananda Roy, and this wonderful darshan. And I hope one day we can also experience maybe that darshan of the Lord, to have His personal presence, His association. Does anyone have any questions? Yes, Mataji? Do you have the mic? Yeah, he'll turn it on from there.
Hare Krishna. Not working. Hare Bol.
Yes,
ah,
that's good.
Okay, that's working. Prabhu, thank you so much. You said pride leads to deceitful behavior, to controlling mentality, and eventually one falls down. Could you please elaborate a little more on this?
Yes, it typically does. It is not guaranteed, but it typically does. Because when one is proud, one thinks themselves better than others. That is actually, one definition of being proud. That means you will eventually mistreat someone. If your motivation is sense gratification, you will inevitably mistreat someone. Because in this material world, there is always a competition for sense gratification. So typically when someone is proud, they feel they have something to be proud about. It could be any of the opulences they possess. And so if their mentality is still to try to enjoy, they will try to enjoy in this world. They will encounter some friction with someone who seems to be an obstacle to their enjoyment. And then they will engage in activities which are not good. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, a characteristic is demonstrated by Daksha in particular. in the fourth canto, then in the sixth canto again, Daksha displays pride, great pride at his own status, his own position. And the consequence of that behavior is that he disrespects two persons. First, he disrespects Lord Shiva. And he claims, oh, your name is Shiva, which means auspicious, but actually you're most inauspicious. And you know, you hang around with all these people and wearing skulls around your neck. And he blasphemes him in many ways. And then interestingly, he does exactly the same to Narad Muni later. Again, this was after Narad Muni delivered his sons, the Hariashvas and the Shavalashvas. And then Narad Muni says, you look like a devotee, but you're not actually a devotee. Daksha said this to Narad Muni. He said, you dress like a devotee, you are supposed to be an associate of the Lord, but actually you're not a devotee. This is what pride does. Pride actually makes you feel so good about yourself that you start considering your sense gratificatory program to be reality. You think it's reality. And therefore anything that assists my sense gratification program is the standard. And if anyone contradicts that, they're not even a devotee. But you see how far wrong this has gone. That anyone contradicts our sense gratificatory activities, they should be praised and worshipped for helping us to get out of this world. But pride is a symptom of being engaged and entrapped in a world of temporary enjoyment. Otherwise, for the devotee, who knows that Krishna is the supreme and there is no one higher than Krishna, and that my eternal position is to be at the lotus feet of Krishna as his servant, what is there to become proud about? There's nothing. There's no justification at all. No reasonable basis to become proud. Any skill we have, any quality, any opulence, we understand has been given to us by Krishna. When we see others possess some opulence, we never deride them. We understand that this person has been favored. Srila Prabhupada says that sometimes in life we see someone is especially wealthy, especially beautiful, especially powerful. We understand that Krishna is showing them favor. And we should respect that. Where's the question of pride? It's all coming from Krishna. I don't know if that adds something. Deceitful. Well, as Lord Rishabhdev explains, Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma yad indriya pritaya aprnoti na sadhu manya yata atmanoyam asan apikleshada ashadeha. When one has sense gratification as a prime objective in their life, they inevitably commit sinful acts. Deceit is a natural aspect in sinful acts, typically. Because you are at least being deceitful to Krishna and the process of our own spiritual progress. Deceitful means, for example, this example of Daksha that I've given, you start to consider that your Sukha Sampati Ghara Ave, as the Aarti song goes, you know, everyone loves this song. And this is what people are after, the happiness, happy family situation and wonderful house and all of this. You start to consider that this is the definition of life or definition of spiritual success. Well, isn't that deceitful? You've convinced yourself that a program of sense gratification is spirituality. You're really cheating yourself to a high degree there. And so the pursuit of sense gratification leads to this misconception. In fact, the two are tightly connected. That's the biggest type of deceit we can do to ourselves. Rather, it is always refreshing to actually be reminded when we eventually slip into material consciousness. It's always refreshing to be reminded by some person that actually, don't get too attached. It's all going. That's actually real truth. That is straightforward conduct. So you may not directly cheat someone else, although in typical dealings, Prabhupada says it always manifests. He says there's no honest businessman. He actually made that statement. There's no honest businessman, because for every customer that comes, the businessman says, for you I make no profit. I'm giving you the best deal possible. It's even below my cost price. just for you. But you know that's not true. So in business, in dealings, typically these little lies, they take place. But even if someone stays very truthful, they've deluded themselves. And they're conducting themselves with an illusion, basically. Yes. Do you want to use the mic?
When a devotee makes an effort and then Krishna gives them some clarity and understands deceit. And then if you look around and you see, oh wow, so much deceit. So then how should we think then?
Well, we know that there is deceit. We know that in Kali Yuga truthfulness is the last leg. It is still somewhat surviving. It's being chopped away. It's truth is whatever you can... truth is these days is becoming whatever you can convince others to believe. And that is why those who are considered truthful or persons to listen to are those who are highly charismatic, influential people. That does not mean they're truthful or advanced. That simply means they have an ability to influence and manipulate others. So that is Kali Yuga. It's increasing. You can see it. It's there in the political world, everywhere, in every country, the ability to manipulate. Every person who wants to be elected makes all these wild claims. I will fix the country, I will give everyone happiness, I will give everyone wealth, I will solve all your problems. And then they realize when they get into power, they can't actually do anything because the governmental structure actually prevents them doing what they want to do anyway. And then they also hear about conflicting agendas from the very people who voted them in. And they're completely confused as to what to do. So it's a funny situation. That's just one example. It's in political sphere, it's in the business sphere, it's everywhere. And we can't do much about it, but we shouldn't be discouraged. Because the devotees of the Lord carry on regardless of the environment. They carry on preaching, they carry on chanting, they carry on following the regulative principles, and therefore their truthfulness is not compromised. But if they embark on this program of sense gratification, they are heading in that direction. Let's take a question from Prabhuji. Well, it's for people online. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu, for a very lucid and eloquent class. You mentioned one point, which was that we shouldn't see our spiritual advancement as a result of our own endeavor. Rather, it's over to Krishna to bestow upon us in a way that pleases him. And I think that sentiment is somewhat echoed in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Madhurya Kandambini at the beginning, where they talk about where it's stated that Bhakti Devi is free to descend as she sees fit. Mm. It's not really the sadhika's endeavor. She's not compelled to do so, but she may do so. So a question may arise, okay, I'm engaging in this process. What if I'm one of the unfortunate few that Bhakti Devi decides not to descend upon? How to feel enlivened and enthused in such a circumstance? And kind of adjunct to that is Srila Prabhupada's statement that if you follow this process in this very lifetime, you can go back home, back to Godhead, and perfect yourself. So how to stay enthused, and is there some kind of contradiction between those two statements?
Interesting. Yes, the prospect of seeing Krishna is not so cheap that we can identify it as a one step in our project plan. You know, if you use a project planning tool and you make a series of tasks and goals and breakpoints and this and that, and you know you've done stage one, stage two, stage three, stage five, I see Krishna. That's not on this project plan. There's a few other loops involved. There's you do all this, and then Krishna does whatever he wants. Which could include you seeing him. It could include you not seeing him for a long time. So actually the mood of the devotees is that, and there are some examples, I think it was Mukunda, who was chastised by the Lord, by Lord Chaitanya at one point. And Lord Chaitanya was very upset with him. And the devotees kept pleading to Lord Chaitanya and saying, please forgive him, please forgive him. He hasn't really done anything wrong. He's just be nice to him. And he's asking when he will be able to see you again. And the Lord said, he will be able to see me after 10 million births. Well, when this message was relayed to Mukunda, he was jumping up and down in ecstasy, saying, yes, yes, the Lord has not rejected me. He will eventually see me after 10 million births. Jai, I can carry on my Krishna consciousness, because the Lord has guaranteed that he will eventually see me. So this is actually the inner mood of a devotee, that they don't consider themselves ready or fit to be in the association of the Lord. But at the same time, they have firm faith that name bhakta pranashyati, my devotee will never perish, and that eventually Krishna will be directly there. Actually, the devotee also knows that sadhava hridayam mahyam, sadhunam hridayam tvaham, madanyatena janati naham tebyo managapi. The devotee also knows that for Krishna, Krishna is constantly in the heart of the devotee. And in the devotee's heart, only Krishna is to be found. Krishna even says, naham tishtami Vaikunthe. He says, I'm not to be found in Vaikuntha, enjoying in Vaikuntha. I am found wherever the devotees are engaged in my service and preaching my glories. So a devotee doesn't consider his current state, where Krishna may not be appearing to him in a dream or visibly in front of his eyes, as any deficiency. They actually see that this is the yajna stali, this is the platform of conducting yajna within which the transcendence is revealed. The supreme transcendence, as the Gita says, is revealed in acts of sacrifice. And so when someone engages in that daily sacrifice, they don't even really consider that they're not with Krishna, because the transcendence is being revealed to them through that act. So they have that patience. Words, statements from Srila Prabhupada, where he says that you can go back to Godhead in this very life if we conduct ourselves properly. This we also take as a great source of inspiration, because Srila Prabhupada also said once, I have the backdoor key to Vrindavan, to the spiritual world. So we're hoping that despite our disqualifications, Krishna can still, Srila Prabhupada can still let us in round the back. And we feel great satisfaction with that. Yes, Bhakti Devi is not someone to control. She is she's fully independent. And Krishna also does not award bhakti to anyone. Bhakti does not just come to anyone. Sudurlabha. It is quite difficult. But it is given, and you know, in the nectar of devotion, we understand just how rare it is, the rarity of devotional service. And what is the reason for that? The reason is that bhakti conquers Krishna. So as I mentioned earlier, imagine someone has tremendous power, what would they do with it? Well, if you happen to actually have Krishna under your control, my God, what destruction you could do. Isn't it? If you're actually a non-devotee and you're not surrendered to Krishna, and you have Krishna under your control, what would you be able to do? You'd make mischief like anything. The devotees know the power of Krishna, but the non-devotees are enamored by his energy. So you know in that classic episode in the Mahabharata, when both of them, Arjuna and Duryodhana, are being asked, yes, Krishna, what do you want? And Duryodhana says, I want your armies, Krishna. And Arjuna says, I'm happy with you, Krishna. Who is more intelligent there? Krishna's armies or Krishna? Krishna is the supreme source. The supreme source of all power, everything. So when we acquire that knowledge, when Krishna reveals that science to us, we'll know that we can have Krishna. He's available for us. He wants us to come back to him. Our acharyas are teaching us a process to get to him. And yes, if it takes a little while, well, let's relish it. Because there's never any loss or diminution. In our next life, we continue from wherever we left off. As Prahlad Maharaj says, you know, I don't wish to go. I see in this world there are many saintly persons, munis, you know, and they go to the Himalayas or to other places and meditate with great vows of silence, caring only for their own welfare. Prahlad Maharaj says, actually, I don't wish to be liberated alone. I wish to assist everyone else to come to your lotus feet, because I know that is the only thing that will actually save them from their distress. That is what I am motivated by. So this is the mood of Prahlad Maharaj. So in one sense, our goal is definitely to go back to Krishna. But while we have this very unique facility, or you could say even position, we've been given this unique position somehow in this life of having the chance to carry out work on behalf of the Lord. That to be recruited by the Lord is no small thing. It's, you know, there's an elaborate interview process. There's applications. There's never any redundancy. You may be suspended sometimes if you misbehave, but no redundancies. But to be recruited into the Lord's employ, if you like, to carry out His work is a great privilege. There's no other job which comes close. No other job offers the same perks either. The chance to be in the spiritual world with the Lord. So we've got a really great opportunity. So whether it's here, whether it's Vrindavan, whether it's Goloka Vrindavan, whether it's some other universe where the Lord is, let's do it now. Yes, Prabhuji?
Harishnal, thank you for the wonderful class. I was just reading Srimad Bhagavatam yesterday, so this verse came to my mind when you gave this class on this topic. It's from the third canto, ninth chapter, first verse. So this is just after Lord Brahma, he meditates on the Supreme Lord, and then he is finally able to see the Garbhodakshai form of the Lord.
Second canto, right?
Third canto. So he says, Lord Brahma is saying, O Lord, today after many, many years of penance, I have come to know about you. Oh, how unfortunate the embodied living entities are that they are unable to know your personality. My Lord, you are the only knowable object because there is nothing supreme beyond you. If there is anything supposedly superior to you, it is not the absolute. You exist as the supreme by exhibiting the creative energy of matter. So he's kind of like clearly saying here, how unfortunate the living entities are that they are unable to know your Supreme Personality.
Yes, that is the greatest misfortune, to be in ignorance of the Lord. Definitely. Yes, Govinda Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Going back to, so Bhakti Dev is independent, then sometimes the spiritual master appears to sort of guarantee. But we could see Bhakti Dev as kind of inspiring the spiritual master to make these promises, so to speak. So it might be just look at that as Bhakti Dev is speaking through Prabhupada. So if we get some kind of reassurance from Prabhupada, we could take it as coming directly from Bhakti Dev herself. One way to look at it.
Yes, definitely. But that reassurance also comes with conditions. So there's a few terms and conditions to fulfill also in order to be eligible for that.
And even Prabhupada can change his mind.
Yes. Anyone else? Yes, Prajan Prabhu.
It reminds me of the time they were. They had a remembering Shruti night down there, the Haveli, and everybody was talking about Shruti, and I remember Sutapa was saying how he was an amazing character by his humility. And one of the examples was that because he had a brain tumor and he had to have assistance, and he would he said about what can we do for you today, Shruti? And he said he would put put the question back in their court, and then he said, what would you like to do for me? And then, so he says, yes, let's do that thing. And so there's also another example again. Shuti Dharma is a wonderful devotee. Was the example that one evening at somebody's, his, I think, guesting the brahmacharis at his place. And he was there right at the end, and somebody saw him, and they said, what are you doing, Shruti? And he says, he was actually eating the remnants of the brahmacharis. And he was saying, this is where their nectar is. He's got an amazing character of humility.
Yes.
That he knew
somehow
that there's some magic in the devotees,
yes.
who, wherever it comes from, but who is it coming from? He can see where it's coming from.
Yes.
So he had that vision.
Yes, it's to do with who Krishna has empowered. That can be anyone, absolutely anyone, regardless of our position, qualification or whatever. Thank you very much. Yes, when we hear these examples, they can inspire us. We need those examples in our life. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.